We'll pick up our study this afternoon in verse 16. So we kind of got the table set this morning, discussing the day of Pentecost, kind of what that meant, and kind of a lot more behind the scenes than maybe what we had realized in the past. But this was a big deal, big day. The Jews had all assembled in Jerusalem from all over the world. It was one of the major feast days. And all of a sudden, they're probably hanging around the temple. I'm supposing this is where this all took place, or at least adjacent to the temple in some way. And all of a sudden, in the morning, they hear this great, rushing, mighty wind. And first thing I thought about that was, oh, Elijah. Or how Elijah was hiding in the cave, and the great, mighty wind went by. And then finally, he found God in the soft whisper. That kind of came into my mind. I wonder if that came into their mind, too. As the sound of a mighty, rushing wind. And so they went and tried to find out where it came from, what it was. And all of a sudden they walk in and they see these 12 apostles with some type of fire cloven above their heads. I don't even know what that means. Speaking languages that they had never before studied and were able to communicate with people from around the world, no matter where they were from or what language they spoke. And all of a sudden now they are just amazed and perplexed. And others, it says, were mocking. I think they talked about this morning, those were kind of the ignorant folks that didn't know any better, didn't know what they were hearing. But the folks that were from around the world were amazed and perplexed at what they were hearing. And now Peter's going to stand up before them, and he's going to, remember, these are religious Jews. These are not just Jews by name. These are religious Jews. They are in Jerusalem for a religious reason, a religious purpose. They are there because in Leviticus it told them to go there. And that's why they're there, because it was important to them. And it was important for them to be doing what was right in a religious sense. And so now they walk up. They're trying to figure out what in the world is going on. They're just shocked about all the goings-on. Very difficult to understand, I would expect for them. Especially, maybe they hadn't been there for the full 50 days since the time Jesus had been crucified. Maybe they had just showed up that, you know, earlier in the week, and they were just making their way to Jerusalem. And now all of a sudden, things are different. And they're trying to get a hold of this and a grasp of this and figure out what in the world is going on. And then it says in verse 14, but Peter, standing up with the 11, raised his voice and said to them, men of Judea and all who dwell in Jerusalem, let this be known to you and heed my words. For these are not drunk, as you suppose. It is only the third hour of the day. It's 9 o'clock in the morning on the first day of the week. Probably about the year 32, 33. There's some discussion on that. But that's where we are. And now Peter is going to make a very detailed and a very logical case to convince these Jews that what the Jewish leaders had been telling them was wrong and what they were saying was correct. And they're giving them. Peter's going to say, just look around what you're seeing and what you're hearing before you make your decision. He said, but I need you to heed my words. And Peter's going to go into his speech. So that's what we're going to look at for a little while this afternoon. This is Peter's sermon. It's not very long. It's a pretty quick little one. It's going to start with some prophecy. And Peter is just going to systematically build his case until he gets to his closing argument. And we know the results. Thousands and thousands of sincere, God-fearing Jews were converted. But before we go further, let's go to God in our prayer. Well, let me begin by saying that this is my observation, that we live in a world filled with idiots. But unfortunately, because of the internet and because of blogs and whatnot, it's hard to tell the difference between the smart people and the idiots, because anybody can get on and post anything behind any name they want to and pretend like they know what they're talking about. And you see that all the time, and I usually say that the people that complain the loudest are usually the ones that know the least. But you see it all the time that people try to pretend like they're experts on something. They don't know what they're talking about. But they have a pretty picture and a computer, and they can type it, and people follow the advice of people that don't know what they're talking about. Let's say you had a car problem. I can sit up here and tell you what to do. I can give you my honest opinion of what you need to do with that car. Or you can go ask my dad, or you can go ask Terry, or you can go ask Jeff, or whoever you want to. If you talk to me for about 20 seconds, you're going to know that I have absolutely no idea what I'm talking about with cars. I have no idea. I'm not a car pro. I don't understand engines. I don't get any of it. they can sit there and tell you the difference of a 62 Ford and a 63 Ford and the timing, and I don't know any of that kind of stuff. So you can take advice from me if you want to. But if you kind of sorted and vetted it out, you figure out there's a whole lot more people that know a whole lot more than I do about cars. Now, you got a math question. You can come ask me. As long as it's not calculus like Aaron's been trying to throw on me. You get me through about trig. You got a math question, I can give you an answer for it. But, you know, but we need to consider our sources sometimes, and we need to vet out who the expert is and who's telling the truth and who's right and who's wrong. And that's exactly what's happening in Peter's speech. There are two sides to this Jesus question. We got a group of 12 people and several hundred followers that are with them that are saying, Jesus is the Messiah. Jesus is the Messiah. He was crucified. He rose again on the third day. He walked among us, and now he's been ascended into heaven. Jesus of Nazareth is the one that the prophecies have all been talking about. And then you got another camp over here. It's the Jews. It's the Jewish leaders, the scribes and the Pharisees. And they're saying, no, Jesus is a charlatan. Jesus is nothing but a phony. He's nothing. He's an insurrectionist. He's stirring up the people always. He's going to get us in trouble with Rome. And we're glad Jesus is gone. We got rid of him. And we're glad we got rid of him because he's a problem. And you have these two conflicting viewpoints. And so now we've got all these folks that have come in to Jerusalem. They've seen some weird things. And now Peter is going to try to talk to them in a very succinct manner. And he's going to try to convince them who the expert is and who the idiots are. And he wants them to think about it. And he says, I want you to heed my words. And this is how it begins. He's going to start out his sermon here with words of prophecy. So in Acts, the second chapter, verse 16, he says, but this is what was spoken of by the prophet Joel. And it shall come to pass in the last days, says God, that I will pour out my spirit on all flesh. Your sons and your daughters shall prophesy. Your young men shall see visions. Your old men shall dream dreams. And on my men servants and on my maid servants, I will pour out my spirit in those days, and they shall prophesy. Well, that is from Joel. In fact, that's from Joel, the second chapter. Now, you might notice it's a little bit different if you read back to Joel. That's because Peter's quoting from the Greek translation. It's called the Septuagint. So there's some differences, some subtle differences of wording, but that's why. So if you want to go back and look, it's Joel, the second chapter, verses 28 through 32. I did not flip that up there because it is nearly word for word verbatim what Peter quoted. And he said, it's to come to pass in the last days. Well, Peter's saying, now are the last days. This is it. This is what Peter is talking about. So here's some of the major points. For those that knew the prophets, when they knew the prophecy of Joel, this should have been expected. If you're a true Jewish follower, a follower of the law of Moses, this should not come as any surprise to you. Number two, he says the Spirit would be poured out on all flesh, and that would eventually include the Gentiles. Now, there was some hints of that in the Old Testament. I know Paul's talked a lot about Isaiah. There was hints of that coming, that it was going to be all flesh. It was no longer just going to be the nation of Israel as God's people. There was going to be the Jews, and it was going to be the Gentiles. And so here he keeps saying all flesh. That was probably interesting to him. Not just prophets, priests, and kings would receive the Spirit. Did you notice who he said was going to receive the Spirit? Servants. Everyday folks. Men servants, maid servants, daughters, sons. It wasn't going to be just the prophets or kings like King David or King Solomon. Everyone was going to be able to receive the Spirit. And you were going to see regular, everyday people filled with the Spirit. And what had they just seen earlier that morning? They saw these regular, everyday Joes, tax collectors and fishermen, and walking around with cloven fire on their heads, speaking in tongues. That's exactly what he was talking about. Number four, this would occur in those days, or in the last days. And that was a time appointed to by God. And Peter is saying, this is it. I like this translation. It's Young's literal translation of verse 16. He says, but this is that. I just like the way that sounds. But this is that. That was spoken of by the words of Joel. And so he starts out with prophecy. He says, y'all know these prophecies. You should understand what's being said. You should have an understanding from your knowledge of your own scriptures. He continues in verse 19. This is the rest of the prophecy of Joel. I will show wonders in heaven above and signs in the earth beneath, blood and fire and vapor of smoke. The sun shall be turned into darkness, and the moon into blood, before the coming of the great and awesome day of the Lord. And it shall come to pass that whoever calls on the name of the Lord shall be saved. Now, is this literal? Is this literal the sun's going to be turned into darkness? Well, actually, it kind of was, wasn't it? When Jesus was on the cross, that sun was turned into darkness. Was the moon turned into blood? Is that a literal or is it more symbolic? I think it's more symbolic. He says signs and wonders would be seen on the earth that could not be explained. And that is exactly what happened in the crucifixion and later the resurrection of Jesus. This oft-spoken of day of the Lord would find fulfillment in these days. Go back and look at your Old Testament prophets and see how many of them talked about the day of the Lord. And it's most of them. Most of your, what they call the minor prophets, plus Isaiah, Ezekiel, this was a common theme, the day of the Lord. And he says it's being fulfilled right before your eyes. And then number three, he says salvation is going to be made possible for all. Not for just some, it's going to be for all. Now, I went in and threw this verse up on here. If you go back to Joel's account, Joel says this, but Peter does not quote this in Acts 2. It says, for in Mount Zion and in Jerusalem there shall be deliverance, as the Lord has said, among the remnant whom the Lord calls. I don't know why Peter didn't quote that. I don't know. So I don't know if that has meaning or doesn't have meaning. I don't know. It's something for y'all to think about. But Joel's quotation was a little bit longer than what Peter's was. Peter did not quote this in Acts, the second chapter. But I'll let you think about that. So, as Peter speaks, man, there's allusions to prophets all over the place. It's not just Joel, but you can see hints of Isaiah. You can see some Zechariah, some Ezekiel. There's even a little bit of Daniel. All those minor prophets that spoke about the coming day of the Lord. If the audience knew their scriptures, they would have had to at least been intrigued, say the least. They would have at least been interested in what Peter had to say. Because Peter is tying everything together. All these old prophecies. And now in the back of their mind, they're thinking, maybe he's onto something because we've seen some things today that we cannot explain. That's why Peter said in 2 and 14, remember we talked about the men of Judea and all who dwell in Jerusalem, heed my words. He's trying to get them to see you've got different opinions going out. Whose words are more believable? Who has more oomph? Who has more emphasis? Is it the apostles and the great signs and miracles that you are seeing right now as you hear this speech? Or is it the chief priests and the leaders of the Jews who are just telling you to believe them because they're always right? And so you've got to figure, wheels are turning in their head. Second part of this speech turns directly now to Jesus of Nazareth. So verse 22, he says, men of Israel, hear this. Jesus of Nazareth, the man attested by God to you by miracles, wonders, and signs, which God did through him in your midst, and you yourselves also know, him being delivered by the determined purpose and foreknowledge of God, you have taken by lawless hands, have crucified and put to death, whom God raised up, having loosed the pains of death, because it was not possible that he should be held alive. But Peter changes gears now. He says, okay, you got these prophecies. Now I want to talk about Jesus. I want to talk about Jesus of Nazareth. He said, God attested to Jesus by miracles, wonders, and signs. Some of these people had been around Jerusalem this whole time. They had seen it. They had probably heard about some of the healings and how Jesus had brought people back from the dead. And maybe they heard about the two fish and the five loaves. Maybe they were there. I don't know. Maybe they saw it. Maybe they were at least secondhand witnesses to it. But he says, you yourselves also know, because they had seen miracles that very day. They can probably still look out and see the flame on top of the apostles' heads. They were seeing these miracles. And he says, this Jesus of Nazareth, this is the one that has been prophesied. So I had this picture up this morning. For the last 50 days, they had gone through the most important time, one of the two most important times, I should say, of the Jewish calendar, was the spring feast. The Passover, Feast of Unleavened Bread, First Fruits, and Weeks, and everything was pointing to what they had seen with Jesus. His death, his burial, his resurrection, and now they're seeing the coming of the Spirit. Everything that Jesus had said was now coming together and falling directly into line. You gotta know. They're thinking, right? They're thinking. They're trying to make a decision now. All of this occurred in the last 50 days. And many people in the audience were witnesses to these events. So who's telling the truth and who is not? Part three, he's going to go to David's own testimony. King David was so important to the Jews. He was the king of the Jews. He was the last powerful king in their mind. He was a prophet. He had written the Psalms. David was just held in such high regard. So Peter's going to go straight to David's testimony. Verse 25. For David says concerning him, I foresaw the Lord always before my face, for he is at my right hand, that I may not be shaken. Therefore my heart rejoiced and my tongue was glad. Moreover, my flesh will also rest in hope. For you will not leave my soul in Hades, nor will you allow your Holy One to see corruption. You have made me known to the ways of life. You will make me full of joy in your presence. Where did that come from? Well, he's quoting from the Psalms. There's Psalm 16, 8 through 11, has some parts of it there. Talk about you will not leave my soul in. Got a different word here. That just means you're not going to leave my soul in death. That's all that means. Sheol was how they would say it in Hebrew. Hades is how they would say it in Greek. He's just saying you're not going to leave my soul in death. Who's going to be resurrected? You're not going to allow my Holy One to see corruption. And so these words were spoken of by David himself. David, the great prophet, the great king that everybody had so much confidence in. Peter knew that there was some indisputable proof. He's setting them up right here. They knew that the Messiah would be at the right hand of God. They knew that the Messiah would be resurrected from death. And they also knew that one of the favorite titles of Jesus was the Son of David. And so now he's putting all of this argument together. Remember Matthew 12 and 33? All of the people were astonished and said, could this be the Son of David? They knew that it was going to be a descendant of David that was somehow going to sit on this throne and bring things back together. That was the Messiah. Well, now, part four, David's failure. There was things David could do, but there was things that David was inadequate as well. Verse 29, he says, men and brethren, let me speak freely to you of the patriarch David, that he is both dead and buried, and his tomb is with us to this day. Therefore, being a prophet, and knowing that God had sworn with an oath to him that of the fruit of his body, according to the flesh, he would raise up the Christ to sit on his throne. He, foreseeing this, spoke concerning the resurrection of the Christ, that his soul was not left in Hades, nor did his flesh see corruption. But saying, all right, here's David's problem. David spoke about a resurrection, but David's dead, and David's buried, and his body's still in the tomb. David could not do that. Obviously, David was not speaking of himself. He's speaking of someone that was going to come from his flesh, one of his descendants. And Peter says he's talking about the resurrection of the Christ. He's talking about the resurrection of the Messiah. Now all you got to do is figure out who the Messiah is, and you're going to win the game. Psalm 132, that's what he's quoting from. For your servant David's sake, do not turn away the face of your anointed, or that also means Messiah. The Lord has sworn in truth to David. He will not turn from it. I will set upon your throne the fruit or the offspring of your body. So he is using David's words to build his case. And then he finishes. This Jesus God has raised up, of which we are all witnesses. Speaking about the apostles. He says, the apostles, we are all witnesses of this resurrection. We have all seen a post-resurrection form of Jesus. Therefore, being exalted to the right hand of God, and having received from the Father the promise of the Holy Spirit, he poured out this which you now see and hear. What's he talking about? What were they seeing and hearing these apostles do? Well, it all started with that rushing, mighty wind. And it all started then with these flames of cloven tongues above their head and their ability to speak all of these languages. They were seeing it and they were hearing it. And he says, these apostles, we are all witnesses of this resurrection. David was talking about Jesus of Nazareth. That's who was saying it. And now you've got to make a decision. Do you want to believe these apostles and their miraculous gifts and their miraculous signs and the power of the Spirit that they are showing? Or do you want to believe the Jews who are telling you that Jesus is nothing but a criminal? Who do you want to believe? David was speaking of another, and Peter emphatically concludes that he was talking about Jesus of Nazareth. And then part five, almost done. Now it's the victory part of Jesus. He continues in verse 34. For David did not ascend into the heavens, but he himself says, the Lord said to my Lord, sit at my right hand till I make your enemies my footstool. David didn't ascend. It wasn't David. Who was it? He said it had to be Jesus of Nazareth. That's a quote from Psalm 68. He's using David's own word. He says, you've ascended on high. You've led captivity captive. You received gifts among men, even from the rebellious, that the Lord God might dwell there. And look up in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 8. And Apostle Paul completely ties this together, that this is a messianic reference. Psalm 110 and 1. The Lord said to my Lord, sit at my right hand till I make your enemies my footstool. David said, it's not me. Well, if it's not David, then who is David talking about? Who were the prophecies talking about if it wasn't David? In part 6, his closing argument, Peter says, therefore, there's our conclusion, therefore, let all the house of Israel know assuredly that God has made this Jesus, whom you crucified, both Lord and Christ. And that's his argument. That's the first gospel sermon. Is that not very structured and ordered? He starts out with the prophecies that they should know. He then introduces Jesus of Nazareth, this character that maybe they knew who he was, maybe they didn't. Then he goes to the words of David, who the Jews revered with such a high degree. He then looks at the inadequacies of David, what David couldn't do, so that he must have been talking about Jesus. And he concludes it with, therefore, let all the house of Israel know assuredly that God has made this Jesus, whom you crucified, both Lord and Christ. The Jews knew the Old Testament prophecies. They knew what they'd read about. Many had been witnesses to the events surrounding Jesus for the previous 50 days. They had seen what was going on. All that were present that day were able to see and hear indisputable evidence of the truth of Peter's words, because they were there observing how the Spirit descended upon these 12 apostles. They could not deny that. No one could deny that. They were seeing things they could not explain. If not David, then who? Well, Peter says it's Jesus of Nazareth. So the question then becomes, did the apostles provide enough proof for the Jewish multitude to accept Jesus as the Messiah? Was there enough proof in that discussion and in Peter's very pointed sermon? And verse 37 tells us, now when they heard this, they were cut to the heart. And they said to Peter and the rest of the apostles, men and brethren, what shall we do? They knew that was the truth. They were being told one thing by the apostles. They were being told one thing by the chief priest. And they had to look at the balance of truth and evidence. And you know how many of them agreed with that? 3,000 extremely pious religious Jews said, you're right. And before too long, that number was up to 5,000. Just overnight. People sometimes want to know, how come we can't have a gospel meeting like what happened there in the city of Jerusalem? Well, it's not going to happen. Because they had indisputable proof of signs and wonders that the Jews could not argue against. They could not take away the fact that these everyday common men, fishermen, tax collectors, they could not get away from the fact that they were able to produce miraculous events. And they were able to speak tongues that they had never studied. They were filled with the Spirit. They could not argue away from that. And because of that, they had to, based on the preponderance of the evidence. I saw a billboard coming in somewhere. It said, beyond reasonable doubt, that Jesus Christ is the Messiah. There was no doubt about it. And 3,000 converted, just like that. And then 2,000 more within just a couple of days. And all of a sudden now, we have the start of the Lord's church. So I think back about that day of Pentecost. Could you imagine going to Jerusalem as a very pious Jew with your intentions of fulfilling the commands of the law of Moses to come give your wave offering or whatever it was that you had to provide as an offering there on the Feast of Pentecost? and leaving as a Christian. Now, that just must have come out of nowhere for these folks. A lot of them didn't want to go home. A lot of them wanted to stay around Jerusalem and learn more because this was so brand new to them. It's not like they could take home their copy of the Bible. They couldn't go to the bookstore to get this copy of the scriptures. They were having to learn it as it was happening. And a whole bunch of them wanted to stay around Jerusalem. And that's exactly what happened. And so I think the next part of our study next week is that God had a plan that the church was going to start in Jerusalem. And then it was going to go to Judea. And then it was going to go to Samaria. And then it was going to go to the rest of the world. There had to be a process. That's exactly what's happened. But it all started on this day of Pentecost. About, 2,000 years ago? Nearly, even close to being exactly 2,000 years ago. On this day of Pentecost, a long time ago, when Peter gave the first gospel sermon. So, hopefully that puts a little bit of perspective on things as we close our study of the day of Pentecost.